I will give a presentation on behalf of Yongsung Kim, my graduate student that I advised for 4 years in her graduate studies. She accepted a faculty position at Cheongnam National University in South Korea. And actually, I'm very happy for her that actually she has a permanent position found in South Korea. Unfortunately, that's the reason why she cannot be here. And because I'm familiar with the study, I'm presenting it for her. This talk is about assessment of total carbon stocks using remote sensing images in a carbon-rich ecosystem not too far from here, the Everglades, particularly the northern Everglades. And these are wetland soils that exhibit consumption and production of greenhouse gases, as we know. And of course, they can act as a carbon sink or source, depending also on several factors, let it be the hydrology, the management of these systems. In particular, the Everglades system is highly managed, particularly in the northern part of the Everglades. And that contributes also if these type of wetlands act as a sink or a source. So in terms of the assessment of soil carbon stocks in these wetlands, the loss are important because we also want to sequester as much carbon as possible in these systems. But how much carbon is stored in these wetland systems and what role they play also in terms of the carbon cycling at a global scale is not really known. And this was the motivation to study, in particular, the carbon content in wetland system in the Everglades. We used the conceptual soil models underlying this study that originated from the Clopped soil forming factor model, has been modified by McBratney et al. Into quantitative context, the Scorpan model to make soil predictions in quantitative soil framework, and recently modified into the step-up model that accounts also, as Cheong also introduced in his talk, for several other factors. In particular, this model is well suited also to account for more dynamic properties more explicitly. As we know, remote sensing plays a major role, in particular to characterize vegetation or above ground properties. And nowadays, remote sensing images are readily available, in particular those also at higher resolution, and play a major role, in particular in those study sites that are not readily accessible, because these wetlands in the northern part of the Everglades are difficult to access and actually very difficult to sample. And short characterization of the study site, Water Conservation Area 2A, it's about 418 square kilometers in size, and you see the distribution of sampling sites. It has been impacted by nutrient influx, in particular at the, if I can browse my mouse here, no, I cannot. In the black squares, these water control structures have served as nutrient influx points and also led to a transformation of the carbon dynamics, in particular in portions of the wetland. Here's a characterization of some of the sampling events that took place. It was based on airborne sampling. In essence, predetermined sampling sites were targeted by the airport, and 108 soil cores were taken at two different depths, characterizing the topsoil. The spectral indices were derived from various remote sensing images that originate at different spatial resolutions. We spot images at the finest resolution of 10 meter, Landsat ETM images at 30 meter, and MODIS images at a coarser resolution of 250 meters. And from all these images, various vegetation indices were derived that characterized, in essence, mainly the above-ground structures in terms of vegetation, water, and periphyton that covers this wetland and gives us signatures about the biota or the biotic factor of the Scorpan or step-up model. In addition, we also sampled topography from a digital elevation model, hydrology, to derive distance to water control structures, and used gamma ray data to characterize the parent material. So these are geophysical data that also provide clues in terms of a soil forming factor that allows us to infer on soil properties. Here's a snapshot and comparison in terms of the NDVI spectral index derived from SPOT, Landsat, and MODIS. And although we see the general patterns that coincide in all three images, we see also the resolution effect. Very clearly, the fuzziness on the coarser resolution image compared to the high resolution SPOT image. In terms of the methods, we used random forest, which is a machine learning technique, to develop soil prediction models. And they were derived specific to the image resolution at 10, 30, and 250 meter spatial resolution, respectively. In particular, allowing us also to compare the soil prediction models to each other. Here's snapshot of the total carbon concentrations and maps in terms of the sampling points. We see also across the wetland in the topsoil some differences between 0 to 10 and 10 to 20 centimeter depth. We see the higher circles represent the higher carbon concentrations up to 492. But we also looked at stock assessment because from a storage perspective, of course, stock give us also clues about how much carbon is actually stored in the system. I must emphasize that also bulk density measurements were taken to derive these stock measurements at all the sampling locations. We can see that in particular in the eastern part of the wetland, we see also the highest stock concentrations that with maximum value of close to 11 kilogram per square meter. Now, in terms of the predictions, if we compare the random forest soil carbon models derived from SPOT, Landsat in the center, and MODIS on the right-hand side, we see that overall patterns coincide, but the coarser image, of course, shows the resolution effect, in essence, losing some of the capability to identify the finer scale variability that was inherently possible using the SPOT images, in particular also showing the elongated features on the SPOT map derived from tree islands that were not visible on the coarser resolution MODIS derived model. If you look at the carbon stock assessment in the topsoil, we see also that the values, in essence, are derived from different, from all three different models, are more or less similar in terms of the absolute carbon values that are stored, the carbon stocks that are stored in the system. In terms of the prediction performance, surprisingly enough, and using cross-validation technique, we found no major differences between SPOT ETM and MODIS models, as you can see also by the R-square values and root mean square errors that are more or less quite actually similar, slightly worse for the MODIS-derived model, but overall quite similar. In the 10 to 20 centimeter layer, we find also similarities between the three different soil prediction models. And overall, the predictive capability was actually quite good in terms of the error metrics that were used to assess the model performance. Here we see more differences in terms of the carbon stock values. The SPOT derived model shows different values compared, for example, to the Landsat based and MODIS derived random forest soil prediction model. Now, when we summarize the results, we can learn from this study that tremendous amounts of carbon are stored in this water conservation area 2A. About 4.2 megatons of carbon are stored over a 0 to 20 centimeter profile. And unfortunately, we didn't sample deep because, of course, in major portions of these wetlands, there are also tremendous amounts of carbon stored at deeper depths. We found that in our study, 9.7 kilogram per square meter carbon is stored, and this is slightly higher than other studies have found, as listed here, the comparative values are from Gould, Bernisch, and Mitch, and Vasquez, for example, from several other places in Florida. We also can compare the data to other studies. For example, in Canada, only 14% of soil carbon stocks were stored in the top 30 centimeters in organic soils. And of course, if we would also consider the subsoil carbon that is stored in the Everglades system, then this is truly a tremendous really area that has even more potential to store more carbon also in the future. In terms of the variable importance to predict soil total carbon, hydrology served as a very good predictor, but also elevation and remote sensing-derived vegetation indices had good predictive capability to derive actually quite well-performing models in this study. We also like to acknowledge our funding sources, NRCS, and the University of Florida that provided also matching funds to conduct this study. With that, I thank you very much for your attention. Yes, time for one short question. Yeah, that's a good question. 2 kilometers. Yeah. Because they are unfortunately arrived at coarser resolution, and you saw also the blocky effects on one of the images, because in the Landsat ETM model, it served actually the gamma as a good predictor, and it showed up actually as really providing actually a blocky type of prediction at the end. So there's a really trade-off in terms of sometimes including good predictors in a model, but then creating some artificial structures in essence in the prediction map that might be actually not real. Yes. Right, there are actually also some trails in the system and some features that actually are real. There are also some experimental sites that actually show even up, that are set up by other research groups that show up in our remote sensing images that we acquired. Fire plots, for example, that we hadn't had any control onto, but they are actually visible on the remote sensing images, actually. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. One short question. Uh-huh. I think there's a misconception here, because this is a study conducted in the digital soil mapping context, where the SCORPAN or step-up prediction model, in essence, environmental covariates representing, for example, remote sensing-derived spectral indices, for example, a digital elevation model that represents topography and so on. These are environmental covariates. And they are using to build a statistical model, in essence, here, random forest. It's a regression technique that allows you to make predictions, in this case, on soil total carbon. So there is no direct sensing of total carbon because, of course, with passive sensors, that cannot be accomplished. But passive sensors like SPOT, ETM, and also MODIS have the capability to capture very well, as I explained, tried to explain at the beginning of the talk, the above ground features like vegetation patterns, periphyton, and some of the open water area to discriminate between, in essence, the surface features that we see in this wetland. And so the idea is truly it's a statistical, empirical model that is built based on environmental covariates and the measurements of total carbon at the 108 locations that I showed. So it's not direct sensing. Yeah. Ooh, I don't think that's possible, but I will follow up with you after the session.